Yes, kia ora tātou and welcome back into the program. Lucky enough to be joined by Wally Homaha. Now, when everybody hears Wally's name, you go, well, that's that cop fella. That's the reason is because he's been around as long as the police force. But Wally is the New Zealand Police Deputy Commissioner of Iwi in communities. And he works harder than most folk because he visits our communities. And even though our communities have a difficult relationship with the police, solely because of issues we're going to talk about shortly, at least Wally's presence for change, that's a good thing. And I'll mention that in our editorial on the lead into this particular interview. But kia ora te rangatira.
Kia ora, John.
Here's the issue, right? We're heading into an election in sort of like 150 days' time, and you see certain politicians. I won't name them or the parties, but it's ACT and National, and what they're saying is every Kiwi should fear for themselves because the police have lost control of the streets, right? That there's ram raids every 5 minutes. There's home invasions every 5 minutes. People are shooting at one another every 5 minutes all over Aotearoa. And so there's this fear factor that's generated. Well, like, what are your observations about that? And am I overcooking it?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. There is that fear factor that's being promulgated through different sources. But, you know, the meetings that I have with businessmen in your place up in Auckland, and I've had several meetings with a wide range of Indian businessmen who run retail outlets, and there's this whole perception that, you know, that we are losing the war on crime. Now, you know, if we start to talk about youth offending and talk about youth offending having tracked down over the last 10 years, and of course, post-COVID, when we talk about post-COVID, and in that whole period, not only did this country change, but worldwide, globally, things changed. And in my travels overseas, you know, internationally, even to London, sitting there alongside of our police staff there, they were experiencing stabbings every day, people coming out of the woodwork, hunting for, you know, just to survive. Now, in this country, I would like to think that we're far better off than that, that the things that we're seeing around youth crime is appalling. Of course it's appalling, but it's appalling in terms of what do we do about it collectively, both the work that our staff on the front line are doing, shoulder to the wheel, working hard every day, you know, and JT, you know, when I think about the things that have happened since 2021 and those spikes going up in ram raids, nobody denies that. But, you know, we've taken over 700 prosecutions against ram raid offenders and over 276 or even 300, up to almost 300 youth referrals. Now, those things are under active investigation, 163 ram raids that we're currently investigating. So nobody's short of doing their job. But, you know, this is something that we've said for a long, long time, that police can't police on their own. And if we go back to those first principles about the police of the community and the community of the police, well, what does that mean for our community? Now, let me tell you, the conversations that I've had with our retailers in Auckland, you know, I'm inspired by the way they speak to this stuff. They say to me, yes, Wally, you know, we've put in interventions into our outlets. We've put 2,500 interventions, a total of 1,300 security interventions being fog cannons, security sirens, alarms, CCTV, all of that stuff, JT. But what they say to me, how do we stop these people in the first place coming through our doors? We know that a lot of these kids come from pōhara families. They come from families that inside of those households, there's drug abuse, there's alcohol abuse. You know, and what hope have these kids got? So when you're talking about 13, 14, 15-year-olds that have suddenly gone berserk, these are kids that are out of school. They don't connect inside of that. They're witnessing all of this hara inside of their households. So rather than stay there, what do? They go out and commit crime. And, you know, it saddens me when I think about 11-year-old young lady, you know, found unconscious in a public toilet, high on methamphetamine, high on alcohol, you know, and and, you know, coming from a household where she wouldn't want to be in because of the circumstances. Now, when we start talking like that, people tend to think we're making excuses. But if we only concentrated on that sector of the community, and let me say again, our Indian retailers and our business retailers in the Walkland have said to me, what can we do to support and stop these kids from coming through those doors in the first place? How can we get ahead of the game? What are the prevention techniques that we need to do?
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? Police have got police roles to do. You and I both know that over COVID, not hundreds, but thousands of young people fell out of disciplined education. Okay. We've got a avalanche of young people up here, and if it's up here, it's everywhere. So we've got over 4,000 Māori, and I'm only talking Māori, but there are Pacific Island and there are Pākehā kids in the same category. There are over 4,000 just living in my backyard here, aged 14 to 20, who are not in education, training, or employment. Over in South Auckland, that goes up to 15,000. So when you've got 20,000 young, vibrant, positive people who have got nothing to do with their time, and the state knows this, they're actually sending you a known pipeline of difficulty, aren't they? Knowingly. And why should the police be the last bastion to keep these kids managed in the criminal justice system? Have you had this conversation with bureaucratic colleagues down there?
Oh, look, I've had this conversation many, many times. And as you know, I've seen these problems over many, many years. I've seen gang warfares where we've had to go in and de-escalate that stuff. I've talked to gang members about these very issues. You know, how do we prevent people from entering to a lifestyle of crime? How can we look at other alternatives? And, you know, if I had to look at a solution around all of this stuff is, how do we mobilize our own communities, our own people, to take control or to take responsibility? And there are many organizations that are doing that. The greatest hope that I have is our investment into Māori organizations, particularly dealing with Māori kids. You know, I said recently that, you know, we're not after not only monetary resource that, you know, that we as government agencies can input. I said we're after the knowledge, the background, the cultural connections of those people who have that expertise around the table to understand what these kids are going through and provide the best alternative pathways for them to get off this slippery slope. Now, I've seen it working with, you know, the program that you're aware we've established, the Te Pai Oranga, in 22 locations around the country, working with Māori providers, not only for Māori kids, but for all ethnicities that go through there. And the results have been phenomenal. And it's because the providers use a platform where it's not just launching into punitive issues, it's understanding the context. Now, just as I described to you, an 11-year-old girl, a 13-year-old boy who witnessed 17 family harm violent events in his household from 1 year of age up to 13, and that's only 17 that were reported to police. You can guarantee by the time that kid was 13, what was going through his head? Would you want to be at school? Of course not. You know, so what other options are there? And that's where I heavily invest in looking at the expertise that sits inside of a lot of our Māori communities, particularly in this whole post-treaty settlement era, JT, where we do have resource. And it may not be money, but it's that knowledge, it's that tikanga, it's that culture that connects. And I've seen it happen with Pākehā kids. I've seen it happen with Pākehā adults, where they come away from that thinking, my God, I've just looked at the harm that I've caused and I need to take responsibility. Now, that's not a soft option. And I guarantee if I stood those 22 locations from Waiwhetu up to Huani Waititi to Ngāti Whātua, across the Mūma to your place, you know, all of those community providers would stand up and say, this is the work that we're doing. This is the work we're doing alongside of police to keep our country safe.
Hey, yeah, well, I've got you. We've got a strong West Indian Association here. Predominantly driven by Fijian Indians, I'll put that to one side because they're more tribal than us, those Indians, when you start talking to them. But I put it to their leadership that, look, if you stop selling cigarettes and vape, you mightn't get ram raided, right? Now, that's part of the consequence, but their argument is that they're high profit end margins, right, on those products. And then you look at the thing, well, I know that there's a good product sitting in the bank overnight that no one's using, and if I break in and have a go at that, it'll be okay. But I don't break into the bank because they've got great security and they fund it. It's not my job to look after that business. Do you understand where I'm heading with this conversation? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a bit of providors of stuff that people want that cause harm also have some obligations to their business as well. It's not my business to fix up issues that a number of our young people want to go in there and take product from. You with me? What do you say to that?
Yeah. Look, JT, it may well have been vaping and cigarettes, but then spread across a whole range of areas. Now, what we've seen is people who break in, these young people who have break into these premises, when they break in, they get about, less than $100 worth of product in some cases, and they create $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 plus worth of damage. So what might have started off as getting a certain product, such as cigarettes or otherwise, now it's just going in and at random grabbing anything and everything that they want. Now, I mean, that sort of thing is just, that's where we have to take a hard line. And, I mean, we set up a National Yep. Retail Investigation Support Unit that was set up in November 2021 to target these recidivist retail offenders. And as I say to you, we have done a great job locking up a lot of these kids, and a lot of them are transient, mobile, anything from Auckland through to Wellington through to New Plymouth, to Palmerston North, just on the run.
How many are Maori?
Look, the majority, in my view, it's a question I always ask a Maori, and hence the reason why I say, this is where, we as Maori organisations can take responsibility, and I again acknowledge the significant Maori organisations that are doing their darnest and their best to address these issues. And of course, we've set up youth panels across the country, and they're not a light touch. There are sanctions put in place. You well know how that process works, and it appeals to their conscience, and then they've got to make restoration and back to the victims, and apologise for whatever they've done. Yes, an apology might sound a little bit weak, but what goes with apology is a whole range of other areas where our social service providers then follow up and start to work not only with the individual but with the families. So it's not only about that individual, it's grabbing the whole family. And I think this is where, if we're to make any progress, this is where we need to invest.
Yeah, look, you'd agree that we're not going to police ourselves out of poverty, which is an underlying driver of a lot of this, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we cop it at the tail end of that. And if it is poverty that's being driven in those households, looking for employment for, a parent. I can talk about, JT, a recent case that a group that I spoke with, 47 young people going through from the ages of 14 to 17, going through a panel process. Out of that 47, only one was enrolled in school. And out of those 47, 46 of those families were in single parent grandmother households. And so how tough it is inside of those households for those people trying to parent in that way. And again, that's not to be downplaying the huge care and protection and responsibility that those families take to looking after their own children. But, that makes life even tougher in some cases.
Yeah, now the final question I'll put to you is, do you think Māori police take a harder line with Māori people to show their comrades that there's no favoritism?
Oh, look, that might have been the case when I started in 1983, but we've moved significantly past that, and we actually see the benefits in a lot of Māori families, Māori people. You know, that's why we created the Iwi Liaison Network and grew that not only into Māori police officers, Pacific police officers, ethnic police officers. And, you know, we had the highest recruitment of Māori women in one wing, 28 in our Puhikura program. So back in the day, that might have been the case, but the culture of the organisation has changed significantly. And you know the work that we've been doing, JT, is to make sure the mindset of our frontline cops who come into contact with those communities understand the context and apply fairness and equity and fairness to every contact that they make.
Yeah, look, it's a difficult. See, the police are in a very difficult situation. They're called out to a lot of face-to-face domestic violence issues, and a big bunch of those I know in my own experience out here through mental health issues, right?
Yeah,
and a lot of our police cells overflown in the wrong times with the wrong type of person that you've had to pick up, and really that they should be part of a mental health service and health as opposed to sitting in a cell that should be occupied by real crooks. What do you say to that?
Oh, look, and you're absolutely right in that respect, that there's got to be another way of dealing with those issues. And a lot of the harm inside of families, there is a lot of stuff inside of the mental health area that we are dealing with. And, of course, that takes a lot of time. It takes, you know, sometimes up to 3 to 4 hours to deal with an event. Whereas, you know, the support that those families need probably sit outside the remit of police. And we're working hard with other organisations to address these issues. We've developed models around what we call co-response, working with paramedics, health and police together, and going into households where people are suffering, you know, where we get call-outs for mental health. So we're trying to take a whole different approach in terms of how we deal with it. But you're right, there are other organisations that are far better equipped and have the expertise to deal with these events than police. Our role is to make sure that nobody is in danger and to protect and preserve life and property.
Yeah, no, good on you, Wal. Look, it's a tough job, police. It's, you know, you're caught in no man's land, particularly in our poor communities. So just wanted to acknowledge the mahi that you're doing to just put a different type of culture into policing in this country, as opposed to it just being a them and us in terms of communities opposing police, you know. And so you've done a lot of work in that regard, and I wanted to pay a big mihi to you. It wouldn't have happened but for your own personal drivers, you know, because I can't think of anybody else who could have done that. So I just wanted to thank you for your leadership in a very difficult environment.
Yeah, thank you, JT, but I'm also proud of the fact that the support that we get from our community partners, you know, Māori, Pacific, ethnic, the community-wide, you know, the support that we've got out there is, as I've always said, you know, we can't police on our own. We've got to police together. So the strength of us solving these community problems is how we do it in partnership. And, you know, nobody will convince me of an alternative to that. Somebody said to me, Wally, why don't we put all of these kids into the army? And I said, well, you know, those are options. If people want to put these kids into the army, and the army is a great career, well, you know, how do we then channel them in and direct them into an area where it may well be the right, approach or the alternative for them to take that career path? So all of those things, JT, are important. But I tell you, I also mihi back. It's a reciprocal thing. We can't do it on our own, and just proud of the relationships that we've built up over the years with our people.
Well, kia ora, Wal, good to have you on, Brian. Thanks very much for fronting this. Not many cops would. Okay, kia ora.
Kia ora, Jenny.